Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome to Way of the Dreamer. This is Robert Noss. This is the show where we affirm and celebrate the power of dreams, coincidence, and imagination to light our lives, to open doors where doors did not seem to be open, to give us access to tools for soul and survival any day, any night. I'm very excited that our guest today is John Lockley. He's from South Africa. He has become the ambassador for an indigenous African tradition, specifically that of the Xhosa, a large people in South Africa to which Nelson Mandela and Bishop Tutu both belonged. John is a white South African who was called to an indigenous African tradition in a way that makes sense. Maledomo Somme says in his foreword to John's book, Leopard Warrior, that John is one of those ambassadors of spirit, called by the ancestors from outside the obvious lineage, the ancestral lineage, to do work in the world. I believe this to be true. I've talked to John before. I've read and enjoyed his book, Leopard Warrior. He has paid a price for his knowing. He's paid a price of being called by illness, really very serious illness with which he's struggled for many years. And then by finding in dreams the way to the healing, finding in dreams the way to his teacher, and we want to hear about her, a splendid Xhosa woman. And it's a path that was described when I first heard about the calling sickness of the Xhosa. It was from a Jungian analyst, Kodera Burman, who lived among them for 9 years, or at least taught with them, worked with Xhosa healers many years ago. And she talked about a tradition in which the patient becomes the initiate. And I'm not sure whether John uses exactly the same phrase, but that seems to be central to his story. And my goodness, if there is a way by which, challenged by illness and misfortune, depression and despair, we can find our way to healing through initiation into a deeper life, into a deeper calling, wouldn't that be a wonderful way for any and all of us to approach things? Welcome, John.
Hey, hi, Robert. Good to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
I hope that was a satisfactory introduction. Your story is so fascinating. Why don't you just unfold for us some of the key elements on your path that made you as you are today, what the Zulu call a Sangoma, a shaman, healer, diviner of South African tradition. And the Xhosa have another word to it, which I cannot pronounce, but is fascinating. So tell us the key steps on the path as you would like to share them.
Thank you, Robert. Thank you. So I think some of the key points for me would be not just my dream, but also my mother's dream and my mother's vision. And my mother comes from Ireland, from Dublin, and she had a vision whilst walking on the Dunleary Pier in Dublin, and she had a vision of African elephants calling her. And this vision of these African elephants resulted in her going to Africa, going to Zambia. And as she said, she wanted to see wild animals, wild elephants in their natural state before they went. And this was in the 1950s. So she had this vision of going to Africa, and that's where she met my father. And then when I was born beneath Table Mountain in Cape Town, I was born with this white clay around my eyes, which my mother thought was very curious, and she said I looked like a little abbo because she had just come from Australia with my father. And the Xhosa nurses ululated, and the white doctor was very stern and very surprised because it was apartheid South Africa at the time. And my mother forgot that story of my birth until years later I came through the gate with my teacher, Mam Gwevu, from the Xhosa Nation, and my teacher had this white clay around her eyes, and that's what made my mom remember my birth. So when they sat down to talk, she asked her, she said, when John was born, he was born with that same white clay around his eyes. And then my teacher said, well, so was I. John was born to become a Sangoma, and it makes sense that he was born with a white clay around his eyes. So that was quite an important point. But another important point for me was the dreams that I received whilst growing up. I had a number of dreams, and one of the pivotal dreams that marked the calling illness and also marked my initiation to become a Sangoma was the dream I had. The dream I had when I was in the South African Army, where I was conscripted to be a medic, and I was having a very difficult time in the Army. I was only 18 years old, and I'd experienced a lot of hardship with the soldiers that were suffering so much. And one particular soldier was one of my patients, and he was sick for about 6 weeks. He was dying, and he was only 20 years old, so he's only a couple of years older than me. And once he died, I was pushed into this existential crisis where I was asking the question, what is life and what is suffering and what is this all about? Because here I am, 18 years old, in the midst of this terrible system of apartheid, and all I witness around me is suffering every single day. So I started doing Zen meditation, and I went for my first Zen retreat into the mountains and the forests, and I spent about 3 or 4 days on that retreat. It was a silent retreat, and then straight afterwards, just before I went back to the hospital, to the military where I was working, the military hospital, I had this very profound dream which changed the course of my life. And that dream involved me speaking to what I called then a witch doctor. And I didn't know about Sangomas. I just knew about the legend of the witch doctors in Africa and South Africa. And in the dream, this witch doctor, this ancient being with these very sharp and shiny eyes, was speaking to me. And I asked him to please teach me about nature, teach me about suffering. And he kept very quiet, and I asked him 3 times. And after the 3rd time of asking him to teach me, he said to me, in my culture, this way is very sacred. And if I'm going to teach you, you're going to get very, very sick and come close to death, because that is the way it is in my culture. And I heard his response, and it was very clear. And then I said to him again, please, can you teach me? And I said, I've already come close to death. I've already come close to suffering. I've just put my dog down that I've loved for so many years, and my patient died right in front of me. And he was very sick for many, many weeks. And every day his mother would ask me if he was going to live or die. And I said, if I don't know these ancient ways, my life is over, and I'm only 18 years old, and at the moment I'm in the midst of what's called apartheid in South Africa, and it's a very difficult and horrifying time for many people. I said, please teach me. And then I saw this vision appear in front of me of the next 5 years, and it was a very sharp and very clear vision. And then when I woke up with these boils on my legs, and I might know it might sound funny, but I was actually pleased, because I knew these boils came from nowhere, and I knew that he had accepted to train me, to take me on as his apprentice, because of the boils on my legs. And then when I went into the hospital to start my shift, I went into the emergency section because of the boils on the legs, and it seemed like I'd contracted tick bite fever, and it was quite a difficult case of tick bite fever, and it was very mysterious because none of my friends on the retreat had got bitten by a tick, but here I was, I'd been bitten by a number of ticks, contracted tick bite fever, and then for the next 7 years, I received dreams from this witch doctor or the Sangoma in my dreams, and I was shown the future, I was shown the past,
I was shown where to go with my life, how to navigate my path amidst the turmoil of apartheid, amidst the turmoil of the socio-political difficulty in South Africa. And I didn't have a teacher. I didn't have a physical teacher. And I was directed towards Zen meditation. And then I found my Zen master who trained me as well. So this went on for about 7 years where I was trained by the witch doctor for my dreams. And then the second pivotal moment, which I just want to mention to everyone, was the dream of my teacher to be Mangwevu from the Xhosa Nation. And the night before I met her, she had a dream where she says the Great Spirit came to her and said to her that she was going to train someone from another culture and that she needed to prepare herself for this moment. And then the next day when I walked through her gate, she said I was the one that she had to train. And then when she sat down and she gave me a divination, she said, she basically recounted the last 7 years of my life with the illness and how I'd come close to death. And then this one moment she said to me, what took you so long to come to me? And I said to her, apartheid. And she said, ah, Tiko Nkosi Yam. She said, I'm so sorry. We almost lost you. You almost died. And then there was a tear that went moving down her face. And in that moment, we looked at each other. And there was no white or black. There was no grandmother. There was just this love between two people that had found each other. And that love has, we've been working together now for over 25 years, you know. So that's the beginning of the story. And then after being apprentice.
Well told. Yeah. And so moving, particularly, of course, the witch doctor's promise was fulfilled, wasn't it? You were going to get very sick. You were going to be close to death. You were going to pay the price. The part where you come together with Ma Mangwevu, I hope I'm saying that near enough, with the Xhosa lady, and she's dreamed you and she knows your life. I mean, this resonates with tales of finding the right teacher for many cultures, as you know. We dream of them and they dream of us and our dreams interweave and there we are. It's a remarkable story. So I'm using the word dreaming repeatedly. You're about to lead a course for our friends of the Shift Network involving shamanic dreaming and African traditions. So let's talk about the actual practice of dreaming and how you understand dreams and how your practice has shifted and deepened and how you teach it for other people, just as a starting sort of provocation. I was looking again at your book, Leopard Warrior, and in the later pages you describe what you saw then as three levels of dreaming. I think you say something like the literal, the psychological, and then the big dreams, for which you use a Xhosa phrase, meaning white dreams, big dreams of perhaps a spiritual connection with your soul country, with your guides, etc. Tell us a little bit, it's a huge subject, of course, for both of us, but tell us a little bit about how you understand the varieties of dreaming and what the key elements in your own practice of dreaming are today.
Yes, it's a good question. Thank you, Robert. I think when it comes to dreams, everyone has their own unique, what I call a dream print. It's like a fingerprint, but it's your own unique way of dreaming and connecting to the landscape of your soul. And one of the most important aspects of dreaming is just to become aware of your dreams at night, because the more you become aware of that unconscious or subconscious aspect of you, the more you can navigate and start to work with it. In terms of dreams that people have, I always recommend that people write their dreams down and track them, start to track them. The most important for dreaming is just to become aware of your dreams and write them down, like I say. And then the next level is to engage with those white or prophetic dreams, those wisdom dreams, because those are the dreams which connect us to our soul, and those are the dreams that connect us to our own humanity, the collective unconscious, to our ancestors. And I know, Robert, you work with the soul and you work with dreams in that way as well. So
the way I would navigate that world or teach people would be working with cleansing herbs, so to cleanse the body with herbs, to do it in a kind of a ritual way, and to write the dreams down, and then the writing of the dreams is a way of tracking the dreams, and then the third aspect that I do myself with my practice is meditation, some kind of mindfulness meditation where you can clear your mind and you can deal with the sense of overwhelm that many people in the modern world experience, being overwhelmed by stress and busyness. I find meditation or some kind of mindfulness practice very helpful to deal with that. And as we have space in our inner lives, then that space is translated into the dream time.
Right. What about talking about soul, thinking about ancestors, thinking about callings? In the Southern African understanding of what's going on in dreaming, is it said or is it thought that if you lose your dreams, it's because you've lost the goodwill of the ancestors or because maybe you've lost a part of your soul? Does that kind of idea come up? Let me give you two quick examples while you get ready to respond. I learned amongst the Iroquois, the Onkoi Hunwe, the people of the Longhouse in the Northeast, that it is traditionally taught that if you've lost your dreams, it's because you've lost a part of your soul. That's why you're missing your dreams. Part of you has gone away, and actually the job of the community, if they know what they're doing, will be to help you get that part of soul back. And I noticed in your own writing and in the earlier work of Vera Buhrmann, the Jungian I mentioned who worked with the Hossa for a while, a parallel idea comes up. I mean, Vera wrote that amongst the Hossa she knew, I guess a generation before you, if you stop dreaming, it's a sign that the ancestors are not protecting you anymore. You're not in their favor. So these are two rather grim, you know, diagnoses of the reasons for a lack of a dream drought, a lack of dream recall, that you're missing a part of your soul, or that the souls of your ancestors aren't very interested in you. Do you hear ideas like that? I mean, is there concern about the loss of dreaming in amongst the African indigenous community?
I haven't heard about it too much, but what I have heard about is that sickness, you know, the sickness of not dreaming is seen as a soul sickness. And then one of my elders said to me, if someone is experiencing not dreaming in the community, then they are encouraged to go and spend time with a Sangoma, having a few sessions with a Sangoma where you are cleansed in a ritual way with herbs and then there's prayers said, and where you invoke the dreams back, you know, where you invoke your ancestors. This is seen as a very, very important thing to do, because he said that if people are not dreaming, then they are not connected to the humanity, and then they are a threat to the community because they are not connected to their humanity. And I think this is what's happening in the world today, and I think this is why I'm very motivated to teach dreams, because the level of empathy and compassion that we receive as a default as being human beings is not being seen in the world today. And the reason is because a lot of people are not dreaming. They're not connecting to that deeper soulful aspect of themselves. And the way to bring it back is for people to realize, let's say, that they're not dreaming in a big way. They don't have the soul dreams. And if they don't, then they need to work at bringing those dreams back. And there's a number of ways of doing that, but it does take consciousness, it does take time, it does take effort. But here's the important thing, Robert. When you are working to bring your soulful dreams back, you are doing it not just for yourself, but you're doing it for your ancestors that have passed on, and you're also doing it for your community, for your children, for your wife, for your next door neighbor, because as those dreams come back, it has a profound effect on those people around you.
Right. Are you still there?
Yes,
I think we cut out.
Yes. Okay.
I think we cut out for a moment, but we didn't miss the important point that dreaming might be for the community with the ancestors and might be part of maintaining or expanding our humanity. So we get the idea, which is the not at all like Heraclitus's famous statement that in dreams we enter a private world, a world of our own. Now, that is true in some ways, hence your analogy with the print, with the fingerprint. Dreaming might be a social and transpersonal activity, and it might be as important for the community and for the world, as you just said, to maintain and expand our humanity. We're talking to John Lockley, the wonderful speaker, wonderful teacher of shamanic dreaming based on African traditions, a healer and diviner of the Xhosa tradition. We'll be back to hear more after the break. You're listening to Robert Noss. This is Way of the Dreamer.
Where can you find out about dreams and the dream world? MossDreams.com. At MossDreams.com, you can find out about Robert Noss, his work, and discover the way of the dreamer. Read numerous articles and essays on almost every facet of dreams. Find out Robert's class and workshop schedule. Read reviews and so much more. Visit MossDreams.com to find your way of the dreamer. That's MossDreams.com.
Robert Noss has a deep engagement with the dream world, and now you can take a crash course from this master of active dreaming at your own pace. That's right. You can get Robert's 8 exciting half-hour programs on a new DVD set called Way of the Dreamer. Share Robert's story as a dreamer and dream healer. This dynamic 3-DVD set can help teach you how to find your way through your dreams to realize your full potential. Don't wait to learn the practical dreamwork techniques that can help you understand how to attain better health, emotional stability, spiritual awareness, and more. Order Way of the Dreamer DVDs today from Amazon.com or MossDreams.com. That's MossDreams.com.
We're HealthyLife.net, reaching and helping a worldwide audience without hype, without shock, and without shenanigans.
You are listening to Way of the Dreamer with Robert Noss. How are your animal spirits? You probably know that shamanic dreamers don't go anywhere much without the companionship of allies, spiritual helpers, who take the form of animals, birds, reptiles, and so on. Some people of this kind talk fairly openly about their guardian helpers. Some are more secretive. John Lockley, our guest, talks quite openly in Leopard Warrior, and I think he might talk fairly openly on this show, about the animal spirit he's connected with. He's already told us about his mother's dream in Ireland of elephants that he apparently helped to propel the trip to Africa, which eventually brought John about and mediated his connection with the Xhosa, Native African people. So, John, talk to us about relations with the animal guardians. Some of your personal stories, I've read in your book about your relationship with the leopard, with the elephant, with the baboon. I don't remember the birds, but I bet they're fluttering around there somewhere. And how, of course, Africa sees this, because we think of Africa as a country of splendid wild animals. We think of, if only because of the Lion King or something like that, we think of the African Sun Gorma or witch doctor connected with the baboon, and we think of the lion or the leopard as great power animals for great royal personalities. So let's enter this realm, dreaming with the animal spirits in the African context.
Thank you. Yes, sure, Robert. Well, when we're working with animals, sometimes when we dream about animals, we say in South Africa that it's a sign of the ancestors coming through in different forms. So animals can be a sign of our ancestors and a different aspect of our ancestors coming through to us. And animal totems, or those animal familiars that come to us, are seen as animals that are befriending us in the spirit realm, but then it can also befriend us in the physical waking state. And the way we work with animals is we just wait to see what animals approach us in the dream time. So those animals that approach us, they are befriending us. They are coming to offer us some wisdom and some teaching. And I think right now many people are aware of that beautiful film called My Octopus Teacher by a personal friend of mine, Craig Foster. Now, it's interesting with Craig. For many years, the two of us would be speaking about animals and we'd be speaking about the plant world and the dreams. And I remember when I was writing my book, Leopard Warrior, Craig was encouraging me to swim every day in the cold Irish Sea. And I did that, and I had most incredible experiences. And I think when it comes to animal totems and shamanism, a very important point needs to be for the listeners to know this, that we don't go looking for the animals. The animals come to us. And if you look at Craig's story with the octopus actually approached him in the beginning, and there was a number of encounters where the octopus came to him. And one encounter he talks about in his article in the New York Times, where the octopus actually took the ring off his wife's finger. And I think there's a lot of symbolism there because of his wife's wedding ring that it took off his finger. And then this started an incredible relationship between him and the octopus. So the question would be, did Craig go looking for the octopus, or did the octopus go looking for Craig? And I think it was very clear that the octopus came to Craig. And I've had experiences like that as well, where the animals are there and they've approached me in certain ways. I remember my first encounter with a leopard, where the leopard was by a watering hole, and it was late at night, and I was 16 years old, and I was in Botswana, and my friends were trying to wake me up, and I was fast asleep in a dream, and I just kept saying, I'm going to see the leopard later, I said. And eventually my friend woke me up because he was worried about my safety. And then we climbed onto the roof of the Land Rover and we watched this male leopard drinking. And it was the most incredible thing for me. And it stayed with me and it started to percolate some kind of deeper cellular connection and spiritual connection. So just to wrap it up, I can just say for us in South Africa, we wait for the animals to come to us, whether it's in dreams or in the waking state. And as it happens over time, we notice some kind of relationship where the animals are giving us or sending us information. They're transmitting us information that goes into the language of dreams and it goes into the language of poetry and the language of the soul.
Beautifully said. And how thrilling to find the leopard there outside the Land Rover as you exit the dream. I mean, clearly inner and outer are interweaving. Did the dream call the leopard, or did the leopard come into the dream, or is something else going on? I was looking at Tyson Yunker Porter's popular book on Australian Aboriginal traditions, Sand Talk, again recently, and he talks about the haptic cognition, he calls it. I might have trouble defining that, except it's about how our thinking sort of may spill over into the world, and of course our dreaming may spill into the world, so that in a sense there is no inner and outer. What is going on within us is shaping and interplaying with what is going on around us. And I think when I look at what I can understand of indigenous cultures, which of course means ancestral cultures, because we're all there at some point or other, I'm very conscious that people who dream this way, who dream with the land, who dream with the ancestral traditions, are dreaming in a sense all the time. I mean, the world is speaking to them in a way that it doesn't seem to speak ordinarily to people living in modern cities on modern timetables. You know, the leopard is there. The bush is also speaking. The mountain is speaking. It's all alive. Aborigines in Australia talk about the speaking land. So it becomes, you know, a constant enterprise. Dreaming with your eyes closed or your dream or your eyes open, it's all a practice of dreaming and picking up the signs and the symbols and figuring out, I think we're in agreement on this, what to do about it, because it's not just a spectator sport.
if you're being called in a dream or if a dream is giving you actionable information for yourself or other people, you want to figure out what to do with it. It might be how you feed your power animals, literally or symbolically, how you move your body. It might be about getting a message to somebody else you have dreamed for. So that's important. Those are a couple of important features of dreaming as I see it understood and practiced in traditional cultures. And perhaps you feel something similar, that we are dreaming with the land as well as with the ethers, that we can dream with our eyes open as well as closed, and that whatever we're dreaming that has some, that stirs some emotion in us, requires action to honor or celebrate or apply the guidance.
Yes, yes, I completely agree with you there. And it's interesting because when you look with the sand bushmen in the Kalahari, they say that this world is a dream being dreamt by the great dreamer. So I always say if people want to connect with their dreams, then in the waking state, they need to do some kind of practice to connect to the great dreamer, to the great spirit. Some kind of devotional practice during the day will help the dreams at night.
All right. Our wonderful guest is John Lockley. John, what's your website? How do people find you online?
It's www.johnlockley.com.
All right. His book is Leopard Warrior. I recommend it. He has an online course coming up for the Shift Network where you find me from time to time. I'm sure that's going to be very exciting. We'll be back for more on dreaming with, in, and beyond African traditions after the break. You're listening to Way of the Dreamer with Robert Moss.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com. Get your personal dream symbols and discover the ones you dream about in Linda McKenzie's Symbols of You, a new book available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target, and more.
You're listening to HealthyLife.net, the radio network that brings positive talk with positive change to make your world a little better.
This is Robert Moss. You're listening to Way of the Dreamer. A wonderful guest is John Lockley. He's speaking from his deep understanding and appreciation of African traditions and what he's learned from teachers in Africa and, of course, what he's learned from his own ancestors. And he writes in his book about being called back to Ireland. I must say, anecdotally, when I got rather deep into Native American traditions, particularly those of the Kanyenka Haka, which is the Mohawk Indian word for Mohawk, people of the stone, some of my fierce Celtic ancestors, Scots in particular, also Irish, but the Scots were the rowdier, started walking through my dreams basically saying, look here, laddie, we knew a thing or two, also turn around and talk to us. So, you know, we are talking about, although an individual dream might be as individual as your fingerprint, to pick up John's analogy again, we're also talking about universal themes and universal ways of approaching the sacred and of recognizing the origin, purpose of soul, and its peregrinations. I'm going to go Aussie for a moment. I'm an absentee Australian. I've lived most of my life outside Australia, but some of it lives in me. I dreamed within the last week of my favorite dead professor, who was a great mentor to me when I was an undergraduate and postgrad in Australia. And I've been thinking about what it means to be from a certain place, even if you're not living there. So as I look at what I understand of Aboriginal cultures, and I don't claim to be an expert or an initiate, although I have dreamed into Aboriginal traditions and have been recognized as doing so by at least one senior spirit man of the Mananjali tribe of Queensland. Here are some insights, core insights, I would say, John, from Aboriginal tradition, which may apply universally to people who know what they're doing, but I'm curious to see whether these resonate with you in your understanding and practice of African tradition. First of all, they use many different words for dreams, whether it's an individual dream or the dream time or the dreaming, words made famous by white anthropologists, which have been adopted by the Aborigines initially in English. But the first proposition is really this: your personal dream is not necessarily a big dream. It's not necessarily a dream of the ancestors in the most profound sense. It's not necessarily a dream of the dream time in the big sense of the place where it's all at, the every when, someone translates it as. But your personal dreams can be your portals to that moreness, your portals to what you called, quoting the Bushman, I believe, the great dreamer. They can be your portals. So any dream can be your personal line of access to a world up top, which is a colloquial Aboriginal world word for the higher reality, the sky world, the world up top. So number two, we live in the speaking land. I talked about this earlier. We want to grow our ability to hear the land and its many voices and to talk to the land. Then third and famously, although famously confused and misunderstood, our lives follow song lines, just as the land is crossed by song lines. These are places of encounter between, let's say, the surface world and the deeper world. And we travel our lives through countries of belonging, which all have their sacred identity and their secret trails, if we'll pay attention. Here's one that I love, and that every writer that I know is juiced by. Your big story is hunting you, you know, like a predator, like a crocodile. Australia doesn't have many land predators other than raptors, which are aerial predators, has sharks. The big story is hunting the right person to tell us. I just love that idea. Stories have their own life, to generalize it. Stories have their own, their story spirits. And they might be like predators, like sharks in the water or crocodiles on the muddy riverbank or an animal on the veldt, a leopard waiting for its prey. Stories are hunting the right tellers. Then here, this is getting interesting. Dreaming is learning. I mean, this is my phrase, but in the traditional Aboriginal communities that still do dream sharing the old way, like the Kukuja out in the Western Desert, you know, you don't tell each other what your dream means. You just absolutely don't do that. You've basically got to figure out for yourself. You might ask the dreamer some detective questions, like who, what, where, when, because it's assumed if you describe a trip you made in a dream somewhere that you actually made a trip. So it would be useful to know whether this trip was to the next billabong, the next waterhole, or that broken back mountain, or whether it was in a spirit realm. But, you know, you don't interpret dreams. People have to figure out their own style of dreaming, their own print, to follow your analogy again. And then what else? Well, we dream our way into this world and out of it. And here perhaps comes your idea of the great dreamer. I mean, Burnham is a great old naturopath and Aboriginal elder I knew, very controversial, very colorful, delightful fellow. Burnham always used to say, you know, every child needs a spiritual godparent who will be a dreamer, because it is going to be a dreamer who's going to guide the soul that is coming into the body and watch over it. And something like that will be required as you go out too. Again, you're going to want a spiritual godparent who must be a dreamer, because you dream, your soul dreams its way from wherever it originates, maybe through that hole in the middle in the Milky Way, though Aboriginals say we have several aspects of soul or spirit, not just one, and they have different origins and destinations. Soul's going to dream its way, perhaps under the tutelage and guidance of another dreamer, into the body. and you're going to dream your way to your soul home or soul homes. So that's my loose and slightly poetic take on some Aboriginal insights about dreaming, and I wonder whether any of that speaks to you from your personal observation and from your knowledge of Southern African traditions.
Yes, thanks for that, Robert. It was very beautiful. I think there's a lot of crossovers between the Aborigines in Australia and in South Africa. You know, there's not too much spoken about in terms of the process of dreaming. There's a lot of words spoken about ancestors coming through and engaging with the living through the dreams. And we talk about Mhlophe Amaphupa, which means the white dreams. So I think that engagement with the dream time, you could say, is where the ancestors come down and they give us advice and they give us wisdom and they show us how to live. And my take on the dreaming from my experience is often these dreams are gifts. The dreams that we receive, the white dreams, those prophetic dreams, are gifts from the dream time, we could say from our ancestors or the great spirit. And what we do with those gifts is up to us. And I know sometimes when people do rituals and ceremonies in the Western world, there's this big expectation of receiving a dream. And I often say to people, you know, the dreams we receive are gifts, and we should never have an expectation from a ceremony or from a ritual or from a meditation that you're going to receive a dream. But when you do receive a dream, say thank you. It's very important to show some kind of devotion. And on that note of devotion, I think the whole Sangoma practice is based on devotional practice. And that's how the doorway to the dream time or the ancestral realm, that's how it opens. It opens based on the drumming and the singing, those devotional practices of prayer and chanting. And as people open their hearts in this way, then people receive dreams. They receive a gift from the other world.
Mm. Mm. That's very good, John. And I'm thinking in my own life, I woke from a dream at 3 o'clock in the morning. I wasn't happy with the dream. It wasn't a nightmare. It wasn't a really bad dream. It just left a bit of a bad taste. But I realized when I thought about it, it gave me exact guidance on an issue. I mean, really exact guidance. I had to think about it a bit. I had to decode a name which was strange in spelling and in origin. But the reason I'm mentioning this is I want to say thank you. I didn't say thank you. Thank you for that dream. That dream was a gift. I didn't like it. I felt hot and dry and dissatisfied, but it was a gift. It was exactly what I needed. So I'm going to get into this practice of saying quite explicitly, thank you. Thank you for that dream. We're talking to John Lockley, who's now seeding practices as well as ideas and experiences. We'll be back to hear more about shamanic dreaming and dreaming with your own print in an African context in particular after the break. You're listening to Way of the Dreamer.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
You are listening to Way of the Dream with Robert Moss. Our wonderful guest is John Lockley, and he was using a big word in relation to dreams and dream work, devotion. I must say, John, that for me, dream work is everyday church. People say, do you go to any kind of church? I say, well, I do dream work every day. I journal my dreams. I share them with other people. We do dream work with each other, and it's a terrific community. I haven't used the word devotional, but it is certainly a sacred community in the sense that we are conscious that as we work dreams, whether we do it in laughter or in a sort of detective vein or in some degree of sorrow and concern, we are touching on soul, because we recognize, as I think most traditions do, that dreams are not only the language of soul, which is a psychological statement we hear often, dreams are experiences of soul. I mean, in dreams, soul gets around. It travels. It meets other souls. It remembers its origins. It rehearses the roads it will take after death, and it goes to other worlds. So to be devotional in relation to all of this sounds a little bit somber, but I understand the depth of respect and reverence that you are inviting. So talk to us a little bit more about that aspect of your approach to dreaming and its sacred quality.
Yes, well, this is in response to a lot of students and clients who are struggling to receive those soulful dreams. And at the same time, we're living in an era which is dealing with massive consumerism, massive hungry ghost energy, and also an incredible destruction of the environment because human beings have become quite greedy and they really want a lot. So I always say to people, if you want to dream, then you need to offer a prayer, because offer a prayer, do some kind of service or some kind of gratitude practice, and then let go all expectation about receiving a dream. See how much you can chant, how much you can pray, how much you can draw or offer something up to the universe from yourself, or maybe giving an offering to an animal or a sick person. Offer your time, offer your energy, and offer that up to the dreaming. Offer that up to the soul of man, to the soul of our consciousness. Because when you just want something but you don't want to offer something, then it starts to pull on the soul of man, pull on the dreaming. And, you know, it's wonderful to work with gifted dreamers like Robert Moss. And it's clear with Robert that you have this wonderful energy of service and of giving. And I think that is that's the medicine to help with dreams. That's the medicine to help one another and to bring back more soul into the world.
Beautifully said, and of course you take us deep into an approach to dreaming, dream incubation, which as you know is setting an intention for guidance or healing, but above all possibly for sacred encounter in the dream space. It was practiced in so many traditions. In fact, there's probably no human tradition that doesn't have examples of dream incubation or temple sleep, which would involve going to a sacred site, like in the Greek world, the temples of Asclepius and their equivalents in other cultures. And making an offering. I mean, the offering might be physical things that you bring. It might be, you know, it might be oil for the lamps in ancient Greece, or honey cakes for the sacred snakes of the healing divinity. But it might be a self-offering, which would involve cleansing, which you referred to earlier, setting intentions, asking nicely. In the Greek world, there's someone that I greatly admire and who I've learned from in this respect. His name was Ilias Aristides. He walked very close to his god Asclepius and another god associated with both death and healing named Serapis. And Ilias Aristides, when asking for the encounter, here's the offering, here's the devotional aspect you were talking about. When asking for the sacred encounter with the guide and healer, he would say something like, I ask for the health my body needs to serve the purposes of the soul. Now, we can improvise that in all sorts of ways. And I thought when I read this, and I've adapted it and made versions of it, you know, suggestions for people,
I thought this is a much more interesting way for a human to ask for support from greater powers and saying, you know, fix this for me, or, you know, I need some help, please. You are asking for help, but you're asking with a sacred purpose, and you are offering yourself. In this case, it's a self-offering. I will live, I will serve the purposes of the soul, which are probably going to involve doing some good for other people. So you talk about this with a depth and a humanity and a compassion which is inspiring, John. Thank you for all of that. You know, as when you just think again about daily practice, what you do and what you recommend to others that they might do, give us, you know, if you will, another tip or two. I noticed, though you don't write about it at great length, that you seem to value the twilight zone between awake and sleep, or between sleep and awake. I value this very highly, and I am astonished that to this day, so few people who teach dream yoga or dream work or shamanic journey or whatever pause to tell us just how much can be accomplished in that liminal, drifty space. But you seem to spend some time there.
Yes, I think it's very important for people to be very mindful of how they go to sleep and also how they wake up in terms of the physical state of sleeping. And when we talk about dreaming, sometimes people confuse it with visions that they have during the day. When I talk about dreaming, it's clear that it's where you're sleeping and your eyes are closed and you are in a state where we say tabula rasa, like you're a blank slate. And in the Xhosa or Zulu traditions, we talk about being in a state of tobekile. Tobekile means to be in a state of humility. Humility where your ego is not being engaged, your body is resting, where you are surrendering and you're lying down and you're completely in a state of shavasana, where you are open. So when you're going to sleep, be aware of how you're engaging with technology. Try not to obviously be on your phone too much, or try and just read a book. And be aware of how you relax and rest your mind before you go to sleep. And then do some breathing exercises, lying down, or just being aware of how your mind lets go. And then I often find a very important time for me is waking up. So when you're waking up, wake up slowly. Don't wake up quickly, and try and don't go rushing into emails or Instagram or social media. Just give yourself until breakfast to actually, after you've had your first cup of coffee, then look at your emails, whatever you need to do. But let that dream incubate. So when you're waking up and you're lying down, be aware of those images that are coming to you from the dream time, and go into those images and breathe into them, and just allow yourself to look into that room of the dream that is speaking to you, and be patient and be calm and listen to what is coming through.
This is very practical advice. I endorse it. This is my own approach. I try to leave sleep as slowly as possible, languor in bed for as long as possible. I might find that I am still with the last dream, because the last dream was or became lucid. It's certainly going to be lucid if I'm lying with it in this liminal state, so I can go on with that adventure to direct it towards healing and resolution, and new things will appear. I mean, in many traditions, this is regarded as prime time for psychic experiences, when the ancestors or the departed or spiritual guides or visitors or gods, if you have gods in your culture, are likely to visit. So thank you for taking us, John, so well and so eloquently into everyday practice. We always want to be able to take this and apply it any day of our lives. We've been talking to John Lockley. His book is Leopard Warrior. I recommend it. We'll be back to say thank you and dream on after this break. This is Robert Noss. You're listening to Way of the Dreamer.
Sit Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Don Lockley, you are a true dreamer. I recognize you. You are natural for this, and thank you for playing ambassador for Xhosa tradition and for practices that all our ancestors, I think, valued until we sort of lost it in so many countries. Thank you for sharing your dreaming with us.
My pleasure. Thank you for inviting me, Robert. It's been wonderful. Thank you so much.
So to John and to everybody listening, may your best dreams come true, and may you remember them.